You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by HuntStand. HuntStand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, HuntStand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software, and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. HuntStand. Upgrade your arsenal.
The Houndsman XP podcast is fueled by Joy Dog Food. Joy Dog Food has a rich tradition of supporting the Houndsman of America. Founded in 1945, Joy is proud of its history and the relationship it has built with the American Houndsman. And in 76 years, there's never been a recall. Made with 100% American-made high-quality ingredients, Joy Dog Food has one of the highest calorie-dense formulas on the market. For 76 years, this made-in-America product has kept hunting dogs in the field day after day, season after season. And when we say made in America, Joy has a long track record of fighting for American freedoms by being on the front lines against the animal rights movement and their extremist tactics. Joy will fuel your hounds and fight for your freedoms, fueled by Joy. This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bear. Get that bear in here.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there! Get him! Get him! Yeah! Good boy!
Good boy, Ranger!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week do you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Any time that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
Southern Hound Hunting Magazine is the most comprehensive magazine that represents your lifestyle as a houndsman. If you can hunt it with a hound, it is being covered in the pages of Southern Hound Hunting Magazine. You also get an in-depth look at the men and women who are engaged in this lifestyle, living it every day to the fullest. From the Rocky Mountains to the Southern Swamps and across the ocean, with articles about our international houndsmen and what they're chasing across the pond. Go to southernhoundhunting.com, get your subscription for $15 a year. Southern Hound Hunting Magazine, promoting the fair chase experience. Welcome back to Houndsman XP, and we are going to the land down under. We've got our good friend from Australia, Mr. Alex Christick. How are you, Alex? It's been a while since we talked.
I'm good, Chris. I'm good. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing great over here. Trying to just get some hunting in. It's a busy time right now. We've got all of the a lot of coonhound stuff going on. Bear seasons are going on. Lion season's getting ready to kick off. I mean, this is a great time of year for houndsmen in the United States.
I wish we could say the same here. We're locked down due to this COVID thing, and we've got very restricted travel, so we can't take our hounds and terriers, etc., out into the country we normally hunt because of this restriction. And I've got hounds that haven't been out of the pen since August, which is very sad. But unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast.
So, you guys are on a lockdown where you can't even go out into the bush and hunt.
I'm lucky that I live. You know, I've got a farm that backs onto a lot of bush, and I can run some of the younger dogs around the place. But you can't hunt like you would normally hunt. You know, in the areas that we traditionally hunt, purely because it's just too far to travel. I normally travel, you know, 2 to 4 hours to go hunting. Unfortunately, that's not possible because of this lockdown at the moment.
Yeah, so you've got to travel a couple hours anyway to get into that sandbar deer hunting that you love so much.
Well, we've got to get into those sweet spots, you know, those secret spots everybody has. I'm sure you have them over there.
Yeah, we won't talk about where your secret spots are.
Oh, no, we can't. We can't do that. We'd have to shoot you.
Well, hey, the reason I wanted to dial you up here and get you on the podcast again is I want to talk about something that we haven't spent a lot of time on the Houndsman XP podcast. We've touched on it here and there, but terriers are such a valuable hunting dog that get overlooked. I mean, by the general population as a whole, you know, we've had, we had the surge of the Jack Russell Terriers in the United States and different things like that. But there's a breed of terrier that you breed and you hunt that I wanted to touch on because they're fascinating to me. And I've got a friend that had a couple of these terriers, and it was fun to watch him. He's got an epic story, probably the funniest story I've ever heard about these, but. You raise Yog Terriers, and I wanted to get you on the podcast and talk about these amazing little dogs.
Well, it's my pleasure. I apart from hounds, I raise and train Yog Terriers, also known as German Hunting Terriers, and I also have Deutsche Drahthaus, also known as German Wirehaired Pointers. So there is a bit of a common thread going through these dogs. Most of them come from the Germans.
Germany.
From Germany.
The German.
Look, you've got to hand it to our friends in Germany. Historically, they have produced some very, very good breeds, outstanding breeds. And Yark Terriers are certainly amongst those. But having said all of that, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Yark Terriers didn't originate of the raw material that was used to make Yark Terriers didn't originate in Germany. A lot of it originated in the UK. And
the United Kingdom, really?
Yeah, they did. A lot of the breeds that were used to make the German Hunting Terrier or the Yark Terrier did come from the UK, England.
No kidding.
England and Ireland, yeah, for sure. And
I'm already learning stuff. Before we get there, hey, I've got to dispel something. What is the proper pronunciation of the breed name? Because you hear people say Jags and you hear people say Yogs.
Well, the word Yark in German means hunt, and in literally they are a German hunting terrier, so they're a hunt terrier,
right?
Pretty well. So look, I've heard them called everything. Yeah, the Serbs call them something, the Russians call them something else. But I think Yark, universally, everybody knows what dog you're talking about. Or, yeah, in English-speaking countries, a lot of them just say German Hunting Terriers. But
we just say Jags.
Jag Terriers. and the Aussies, are the same. You know, guys are going to say, I want one of them Jag Terriers. I said, yeah, I don't know. the thing is, I only sell my dogs to hunters or people that use them in an operational context, and I'll explain the reason for those as we go along. But Unfortunately, look, with a lot of terrier breeds, and as I said, just in our preliminary conversation, Jack Russell Terriers, English Fox Terriers, and many of the other old terrier breeds, what they used to call Patterdale. Well, look, even, you only really started hearing about Patterdale Terriers in the last 20 years. Nobody heard of a Patterdale Terrier before then. Before that, they were called Fell Terriers and Manchester Terriers. And all of these breeds, they do share some common ancestry with Yarg Terriers. The extent of which, I suppose, mixed up in the mists of time. But the Germans, when they decided that they, between the two world wars, the Germans decided that they would come up with a strictly German hunting terrier. And
it was going to be their secret weapon.
Well, I think it was. They created, in effect, as far as terriers are concerned, they created a secret weapon for sure. I don't think that wasn't their goal. Their goal was initially to create a versatile hunting dog that good to be used underground, for underground quarry like badger and fox, stuff like that, and also to be used above the ground as you would a normal, another variety of versatile hunting dog like your German wirehead pointers, your short-haired pointers, your Kurtz Haas, or whatever you want to call them these days. But the terriers were attractive to a lot of the people in Germany and in other parts of Europe because of their size. They're fairly small dogs, and they're a great little dog as far as prey drive and desire is concerned. They're a real hunting machine, and many of the kennels that breed them, not so much in Germany these days, and I suppose I'll create lots of enemies saying that, but more in the Eastern Bloc, to be versatile hunting dogs. And there are other specialist areas that these dogs are used in where I suppose the versatility doesn't come to the fore, but most of the people in Europe that use them as versatile hunting dogs. Places like, say Serbia and some of the other Eastern Bloc countries, they do use them as competition dogs a lot, working on fox and badger underground in artificial dens. That's not legal in Germany and many other places in Europe. But our friends in other parts of Europe aren't all that bothered about that, so they continue to breed some very, very hard dogs. And
yeah, I'm gonna be a little bit hard on the American people. we normally are not good about history or geography. That's just the overall general rule. So when we talk about Eastern Bloc countries, I'm gonna try to lay this out a little bit. You've got the big pond that separates the United States from England. And then across the channel, you've got Europe, and then you've got Germany that kind of lays in the middle of that European continent, and then you've got the Eastern Bloc countries that lay between Germany and Russia. Okay, so, and I don't mean to be facetious, but I'm trying to lay this out because Eastern Bloc is something that a lot of people don't think about. It's not something that we use. That terminology is not something that, we'll see it on the news occasionally, or we'll hear the term kicked around, but knowing exactly where that is is not something that all Americans, it's not common knowledge is what I'm trying to say. It's not that we're all dummies. It's just that it's not common knowledge. So you're coming from that Serbian Eastern Bloc, but I have a question before we get too deep into this whole thing. But so what is it with the Germans and dogs that are black and tan? You've got the Doberman, you've got the Yog Terrier, you've got the Rottweiler. All of them are predominantly black dogs, and then they've got the tan trim on them, much like the black and tan Coonhound. with the pumpkin seed spots above the eyes. What is it about the Germans in that color configuration? Was there some crossover there, or was there a separation of genetics that created all three of those breeds, or do you know the answer to that?
I think it's far more by design than by fluke. The Germans, they do have a definite penchant for black and tan dogs, and they even have so they're Bavarian mountain hounds. They're not a common dog, but you know they're black and tan as well, as are several other European type dogs. But as you say, the Rottweilers, the Dobermans, the Yark Terriers, all share very similar colouring. I don't think that colouring was a major issue in the first instance, but I think when they what they call themselves cynologists or dog breeding people back in the middle of or early 19th century, around 1915, they decided they wanted to breed a genuine German hunting dog or hunting terrier, and they bred them down from various other breeds. But they definitely concentrated on keeping any other colour apart from black and tan out of the breed. So the breed standard pretty well says these things have got to be black and tan, with very few exceptions. Now, you do get brown and tan, and you also get a little bit of white splattered here and there, usually on the chest and occasionally on a front toe. But they tend not to. They don't like any white on them, and they don't like any brown on them. But as the Serbs say, look, they'll breed the best dogs to the best dogs as far as the purpose is concerned, you know, to hunt and to compete with.
So they breed best. What you're saying is best of best their common breeding practice.
Of course, absolute best of best. Now in Germany, there is a breeding as in many other hunting breeds in Germany, there's an organisation that that pretty well tell you what needs to happen to Yark Terriers in order to breed them. To have a registered Yark Terrier in Germany, that dog not only has to pass a confirmation test, it also needs to pass various breed tests, which mean, you know, the dog needs to be able to cover all those points, both in confirmation and physically, and its ability to hunt, before they'll allow you to breed them. And they do that with quite a few breeds. And there's organisations that have popped up worldwide, including in the US, that they have these testing organisations. Other countries don't have formal testing organisations, and their testing is generally done in real time. You know, the things are going to get out there and hunt. They're going to hump their hearts out if they don't cut the mustard in the field. They're not bred with, and as I'm sure.
So they have to look like a Yog Terrier. They've got to pass hunting. They're setting the bar on hunting traits. Until you do that, you cannot breed a Yog Terrier in Germany you just simply can't breed them. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Pretty well. The dogs, the males and the females, the breeding stock, have to be authorized for breeding by a breed warden in Germany.
A breed warden.
They have a breed warden, the same as the Deutsche Drahthaar people have. There's actually a Deutsche Drahthaar organization in North America at the moment. Then the terrier version of that is pretty well the same, or very similar. The tests apply more to the terrier than they do to the draughts. You know, like terriers don't point, but you know, they test things like you know, blood tracking ability, love of water, obedience, all of those good natural hunting abilities that we all look for in our versatile hunting dogs. That's what they apply the tests to. And the Germans continue to do it, and they say that the way that they do things, they produce the best dogs in the world, and arguably that is definitely the case. Unfortunately, there's things that they can no longer do in Germany to test the dogs due to various animal welfare laws, etc. So you then got people like our friends from the Eastern Bloc, Serbs, of which I'm a full-blooded Serb, even though I was raised in Australia. My family background is Serbian, so I'm fortunate enough to have a very good network of friends over there who are dyed-in-the-wool terrier and hunting men, and that they have these dogs that are top-class hunting dogs, and that's where I've been able to source them. And look, it's not hard to get the... It is hard to get the real McCoy. As you know, in the US, with a lot of your hound breeds, you can't just wander out and get yourself a good hound. You know, there's a lot of research, and there's a lot of connection that you need to have. And it's no different to the top quality dogs in Serbia and in the Ukraine and in Russia and Slovakia and Croatia and Spain and all those places where these dogs are used quite a lot. So there's a lot of similarities in quality dogs and, you know, how to get them. And it's certainly not an easy process.
You know, when you sit here and you think about, when you just think about how does a newcomer find quality stock, it's always better to begin your hunting career with some success. And you look at, where do I go to get this success? And you mentioned hounds. And until you're in hound, you know, you've been a houndsman for a few years and you've been exposed to a lot of different hounds, that is a really hard thing for people to do, to understand where I go to get what I need to be successful, to be happy.
Well, it's a lot of people think that it's simple, but it's far from a simple process. It doesn't matter how much money you've got or... you know, how well you are connected. You need to find the dogs that you're looking for the application you have to use them. And I couldn't find any in Australia when I was looking for, you know, for top quality hunting dogs, purely because, you know, we're a bit of a backwater as far as quality bred dogs is concerned. Most of the dogs that are brought into Australia are brought in by the show people. And unfortunately, and I say this with the highest level of respect to the show people, like they like a dog to look pretty and stand on a bench and be attractive to a judge. That's it. That's also important with other hunting breeds, with other breeds, but it's not enough. The dogs need to be able to do what it is that they are bred for. And unfortunately, in Australia, as in other places, there's no test that applies to whether or not the dog can do the work it's supposed to do. No, they do have, gun dog clubs here where they do field trials and stuff like that. But, you know, as well as I do, all of that stuff's fine. But the real test of these dogs is what happens out in the field when you're hunting. And if the dogs can't cut the mustard in the field, they're not doing their job. They shouldn't be bred with. I had to travel to Europe to get the dogs that I was looking for purely because I didn't have the raw material here.
Is Australia organized in that aspect where there are hunters over there that are setting up hunt tests or qualifications? Has Australia evolved into that, or what's the landscape look like over there beyond the show ring?
Look, the show ring seems to be the test that everybody applies. Under the Australian National Kennel Council, there is, even though they're affiliated to the FCI, and don't ask me to explain what the FCI is, Google it, it's a very long word. But the FCI in Europe, actually many cases actually have a testing process. A natural ability testing process for hunting dogs and working dogs, that doesn't apply in Australia. And the Australian breeding of dogs in Australia is pretty well restricted to the show dogs. Anybody that wants to bring dogs, performance dogs, in generally does it off their own bat. So if you want to go and get yourself some top quality hounds, if you want to get yourself some top quality terriers or versatile hunting breeds, you've got to pretty well go over to the places that where they breed these dogs. my terriers, you know, they come from, as I say, the Eastern Bloc. I've got a couple of terriers that came from the Eastern Bloc via the USA. With some very good friends I have over there, and you know we share genetics and all that sort of stuff. So the world's no longer a small place. It's no longer a big place. It's a small place. And once you've got your network of I suppose trusted friends in place, that's when you can start moving a few dogs about and making sure that
you can watch a YouTube video and figure out how to fix your truck or import a hunting dog from Serbia. You know, it's no longer a big place.
Look, the world's not a big place. And, you know, I think just what we're doing now, just speaking to each other across the world for this podcast.
Absolutely.
The network I've developed with like-minded hunters from the US and from Europe is fairly big, and the level of expertise makes you feel very humble. There's people out there that have forgotten more about terriers and hounds than I'll ever know, and I'm humbled to be, you know, in the loop with them. Yeah. So I'm definitely walking. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. And some of these giants don't even know they're giants. You know? They don't have the internet.
Well, I think that
they don't have the internet, right, and things like that.
Yeah, they don't care if they have the internet or 5,000 likes on Instagram or,
they don't care,
you know, 6,000 followers on Facebook. They don't care. They're just out here doing their thing, and that's, you know, I love those guys, and that's what the Houndsman XP podcast is all about. Is we want to bring those people to the limelight. You know, we want to bring them out and show people that, man, you know, it's still out there and it still exists. But so we started to talk about breeders in the United States, and we had this conversation off air. You asked us how many Australians were listening to the Houndsman XP podcast, and you're like, they're a third on our, you know, when you look at the world map and I can see where people download the podcast and things like that. Australia's number three. And it's a testament that people in Australia are still, you know, trying to hunt, and they're trying to use these dogs. So what kind of things are you up against in Australia to be able to have a usable dog, and the Victoria Houndsman Hunters has to be instrumental in some of that. So give us a brief thing on that, what that landscape looks like.
Before we get to that, we've got to pay a few bills. Briar Creek Kennels is your complete hound hunting outfitter. Boots, lights, collars, and tracking equipment. Dog boxes, kennel supplies, collars, clothes, squalors. Whew, they have it all. Briar Creek Kennel is a Garmin and Dogtra dealer. Owner Chris Girth will ensure Briar Creek Kennel customers will get top of the industry customer service. Whether you purchase from their website or you find them at a major coonhound event, Chris and his staff will share expert knowledge and experience about every product they offer. Chris Girth is a top competitor and breeder of hounds. He knows what gear you need to be successful. Look for Briar Creek Kennels on the web for a complete online store, or look at their fully stocked trailer at any major coonhound event. Briar Creek Kennels, offering a hound hunting public generations of excellence.
Australia, just to illustrate a couple of things, Australia has still got a lot of wild places, you know, places where hunters can go and hunt with their dogs. And, it's the culture, you know, is still there. The hunting culture is still there, even though there are those that are desperately trying to I suppose diminish it or ruin it. It's very hard to suppress. And you know, guys hunt with dogs here. Yeah, they have since this country, since, you know, white settlement here occurred, and even before white settlement, our indigenous people are all dog hunters. They all hunt with dogs, you know. And the tradition of hunting with dogs goes back a long, long way. The issues that we have here, I suppose, are no different to the issues that you have anywhere in the US or overseas. People don't identify hunting as being something that that we do these days, you know. So they're constantly looking for opportunities to, I suppose, ban it or restrict it to a level where we can't do it anymore. But don't worry, there's plenty of us still that go hunting and that are keen breeders of dogs, and we get out in the bush and we chase all the relevant critters that that we've always chased. We have everything from, you know, from feral cats to foxes to feral pigs. There's all sorts of other introduced species here. There's six introduced deer species, some of which it's lawful to hunt dogs with. In particular, here in Victoria, which is on the southern part of Australia, at the bottom of the Great Dividing Range, we can hunt sambar, which are a very large deer, slightly smaller than an elk, generally. We can hunt them with hounds, and they've given us three separate types of dogs we're allowed to use. There's actually regulations that regulate all that stuff. So we can use scent hounds.
That's where I'm wanting to go.
Well,
thanks. It's like you're reading my mind.
We took the tourist route getting there, but I'm sure we'll get through to it. they've allowed hunters in Victoria to use three, as I said, three different types of dogs. The first type is what they call the gun dog, and it covers all of those versatile breeds, everything from, you know, pointers through to setters to the spaniels, and pretty well any of those types of breeds you can use. They, I suppose, call them companion dogs or whatever you want. They figure that you can use two of those at a time to go and hunt sambar. Then they have the deer hunting dog group, which includes dogs like Jack Russell Terriers, German Hunting Terriers, and a few other breeds of smaller type dogs. And then the third is the hounds. And then they even restrict us on the type of hounds that we can have. So we can have bloodhounds, harriers, and beagles. They're the only three breeds that can legally be used at this stage to hunt sambar with.
And, really?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of political thrust and parry that went on regarding the restriction of using any other hounds. Like many of us would be very keen to be able to use any of the coonhound breeds or the foxhound breeds to hunt deer, because they're the most appropriate breeds for that type purpose, hound breeds for that type, for that purpose. But they decided they wanted to manage, in inverted commas, the hound hunting in Victoria, and they restricted the breeds, thinking that by restricting the breeds, they would slow down hunts and be able to manage hunters a little bit better. But nothing could be further from the truth. You know, if you apply any scientific principles or any legal principles to that situation, it just doesn't cut the mustard. And we're testing that all the time.
So bring it. I hear you. So bringing this back to Yog Terriers, I want to know. So the whole Yog Terrier, any terrier, you're hunting a sambar deer with a Yog Terrier. Describe to me how that hunt goes. It's not a blood trailing. It's not, you know, you're actually using. You tell me how you use and implement the Yog Terrier into your sambar hunts.
Right. Look, I'll give you a quick context. We're not allowed to use hounds for certain parts of the year. So we're legally allowed to hunt sambar between April and November here in Australia using scent hounds. Right. Now, at other times, we can still hunt sambar using other types of dogs, including gun dogs and deer hunting dogs, of which Yark Terriers are a legitimate breed or a permitted breed. Those dogs, we they don't hunt the same as hounds do. They're much smaller dogs. You need to understand the Yark Terrier is 10 kilos ringing wet as an adult. You know, the tall ones stand between 13 and 16.
You're going to make me do math, Alex. Yeah,
well, the tall one will stand between 13 and 16 inches at the shoulder, and a big one weighs about 20 pounds.
See, that's how much smarter Australians are than Americans, because you already knew that. And I was getting ready to fire up Google here look up how much 10 kilos was.
It's all good, man. I'll take the pressure off.
Seth already knows all this stuff.
Yeah, Seth's very cool. He's very decimal. I mean, that's good to see.
That's right. So,
look, basically, with the terriers, the hunting techniques aren't that different, even though we sort of we hunt in smaller chunks of country, right? So I've got dogs that'll you call rigging. You know, you have a dog in the back of a truck and it barks when it smells something.
Yep.
I've got terriers that'll do that, no problem. And oftentimes I don't keep them in a box. I keep them in front of the truck with me, you know, and I've got to wind the window down just so they can get their nose out. And when they start doing backflips and screaming their lungs out in the front of the truck, it's when you open the door and it's action stations. But the thing is,
that is so cool.
It's like using itty bitty hounds, but they've got much more drive than a hound as far as prey drive is concerned. And I'll get a lot of argument with that, but you need to see these dogs hunt to appreciate how they do business. It sounds like a seized bearing tearing through the bush at 200 mile an hour, just screaming its heart out, trying to get to that quarry. And when you consider that the animal that they're chasing may weighs well over 300 pounds and up to 600 pounds, and this dog that weighs 20 pounds is chasing them through the forest. Oftentimes, I've shot numerous deer that have been baited up by Yark Terriers, and they just stand there looking at these things saying, "What the hell are you?" It's a tiny little thing barking at them. And they'll often just stand there looking at the dog. The dogs generally won't close with them. They'll bay them. And then as a hunter, you shoot the animal as it's bayed. Other times we shoot them when they're on the move. We set hunters up in strategic positions on spurs and in saddles. No different to what you guys do with mountain lions and bears over there. And shoot them as they cross, or shoot them on the way to where they're going. The thing is, we haven't got, apart from feral cats, we haven't got anything here that really trees. But in my other life, I actually run an animal damage control business, or a pest control business, and I use Yark Terriers quite extensively for finding invasive species, things like like cats and foxes, both in an urban context and in in forest and rural context as well. So they're a fantastic working dog. They're also really good at blood trailing. And a lot of guys in the US actually use them as blood trailing dogs because they're fairly small. They can they can get through heavy cover pretty good, and then they're pretty easy to manage on a tracking lead. I know you've got a background on tracking, so instead of getting dragged around by a 50-pound dog, you're getting dragged around by a 20-pound dog. They're really good at that sort of stuff. So blood tracking is good. We're recovering game that would never have been recovered normally had you not have had a dog, and the Yark Terriers fit into that space pretty well. But as far as scent trailing is concerned, I hesitate to say that they've got a nose as good as a hound, but by gee, they're close. They're close,
Well, hey, I'll tell you what. I think a lot of times we automatically think we've had quite a few conversations about scenting and the scenting out on this podcast. But when you take a breed of dog like the Yark Terrier, that, I mean, he's got a long, for his body size, he has a very long nasal plane. He's been bred specifically for those attributes. And I would say the ones that I have seen are phenomenal. They've got a phenomenal olfactory system. The development of that olfactory system, their ability to scent is really surprising, to the point that, and I've got a very limited exposure to them, but I've been really surprised.
Look, most terriers that I've had much to do with, a sort of mediocre, average sort of scent dogs and those dogs. You compare, say, Jack Russells and Border Terriers and Fox Terriers and so-called Patterdale Terriers and Fell Terriers. They've definitely got noses that work, and they're significantly better than having no dog. But these Yark Terriers are something else as far as the use of their noses.
Better than having no dog. Just lay it right. Just lay it out there, Alex.
Well, Terry, a lot of terriers just, you know, they're not renowned for their scenting ability, but the way that the Germans bred these dogs and their ability to isolate these traits is pretty good.
We'll be right back after we get this quick word from our sponsor. Check out Dogs Are Treed at dogsaretreed.com. And if you go to their website at checkout and enter the code HXP 20% off, you will get 20% off of your entire order on all of their branded products. Leashes, tie-outs, medical kits, paws are protected. Build your pack from the ground up and support a fellow houndsman that supports your lifestyle. Enter the code HXP 20% off at checkout. Go to their website today at dogsartreed.com. This portion of the Houndsman XP podcast is also brought to you by Dakota 283, offering you superior protection for your hounds. Kennels, waterers, all kinds of cool gear. Check them out at dakota283.com, and at checkout, enter the promo code HXP10 and get 10% off of your entire order. Without totally sidetracking this whole podcast, I mean, I want to hear about Yogs, but we are so lost when it comes to understanding the power of a dog's nose. I had my boxer, and I throw her in the truck with me when I go bear hunting, and I put her on the rig rack, and I kind of do it because people think it's funny, but she absolutely, when it's a like a box shaking, a bear across the road, not to, she will start barking, and you can just watch her demeanor when I'm out with her and stuff. She will actually start air scenting and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's a boxer. I mean, they got a nasal plane of 2 inches. So we're completely lost when we're trying to comprehend the power of a dog's nose. It's beyond anything that we can even fathom.
Of course it is. And I think the day that can be actually quantified in some way, it'll be a good day when they work out just how to do it. But it's not so much just the nose. I think, you know, obviously the dogs with all the genetic predispositions to be able to smell well and identify things easy are great. But the ability for the dog to connect what it smells with the operational context of what it does, that's the key. You know, a lot of dogs can smell stuff, but they can't work out how to, what they need to do once they smell it. And I think all hunters know, you know, why you can have two belly brother hounds. One could be a champion dog, a cold trail, and the other dog won't even smell things that you know are there. So that's something that we need to think about. How does that message go from the tip of the nose into the brain and evoke a response?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And the yog is so tell me what you're looking for in a Yog Terrier. How many generations are you into breeding your own stock there in Australia?
I've got a few bloodlines going here. I'm fortunate enough to have dogs that are from various different parts of Serbia. I've been breeding these dogs from about 2007, I got my first Yark Terriers, and since then, I've refined, what my goals are as far as these dogs are concerned. I have dogs that I use pretty well solely for hunting Samba with, and I've got other dogs that we use for work with, as I explained earlier, regarding tracking and locating introduced predatory species. And there's different traits that I've looked for to breed to, and I suppose I'll spend the rest of my days refining that, as I'm sure most hound owners in the US are doing. You breed for traits, you breed for quality, and you breed to continuously improve what you've got. I suppose history is our judge. In 50 years' time, somebody will be saying, that guy didn't know what he was doing when he was breeding these terriers. Or he might say, he had some idea. It's hard to quantify any of this sort of stuff, but I suppose the best we can do is breed the dogs that for the purposes that we want to use them for. And fortunately, with what I do, that there are other people that are keen to use the dogs for the purposes that I want to use them for. And look, with terriers.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Go. No. Finish your thought.
With terriers, there are a lot of traits that are desirable, and there are some that are not desirable. Like, if you've got a terrier that doesn't want to kill everything he sees, he's not much of a terrier. That's the truth of the matter. I've got terriers here that doesn't matter what it is. If it's alive, they want to make it dead, and that's pretty well how it works. And initially, that's what they are bred for. Your ability as a trainer to be able to stop that impulse and train around that impulse is important. So they're not a dog for everyone. If you're just a casual sort of dude that doesn't bother training his dog, don't get yourself a Yark Terrier. You're going to get yourself into trouble.
I was going to go to the pitfalls of people that want Yogs, but again, Alex, it's like you're reading my mind. I want to know, what is a disqualification for you? You see a trait in a dog and you're like, that is not a breeding stock dog.
Well, my dogs have to have an absolute desire to hunt. They've got to have that drive, that prey drive, and they've got to, no matter what, they've got to get to that critter. If they're indifferent, or if they lose focus, that's a deal breaker pretty well straight away. They've got to, no matter what, they've got to have that desire to hunt, and it's probably one of the hardest things to breed for. Also, I suppose biddability is something that's pretty important, and you find with any of the terrier breeds, or the good terrier breeds, sometimes they practice self-rewarding a little bit more than they ought to. So,
Explain that.
Well, with a lot of dogs, when we train dogs, we generally use various techniques, including operant conditioning and all of that sort of stuff. I won't bore you with the details. But oftentimes you give the dog a reward for doing something that it does correctly. So it's positive reinforcement. From time to time, no matter what value reward you can give them, is nowhere near what they can reward themselves with. Right. So if I'm going to let a dog play with a Kong toy, or he's going to grab a pussycat out of a tree and shake the piss out of it, you know for a fact that he's always going to try to grab that pussycat, So as a trainer, you need to be able to read the play, and you need to be able to manage your dog. There's no different to hound dogs or any other breed. If you've got a hound dog that won't chase, or that won't put its head down and its ass up and go and try to find something to hunt, or sniff the air trying to find something to hunt, you haven't got much of a hound dog. Even as little puppies, you can tell with these Yark Terriers which ones are going to hunt and which ones are going to be indifferent. But I've yet to see one that's indifferent. There's some champion hunters, but the rest of them are pretty good. There's you always get the dog that's a standout, but a good honest Yarg Terrier, that they're sort of par for the course. I've yet to see anything that's a dud that won't hunt naturally. I've seen them ruined by people that don't know what they're doing, you know, overuse of shock collars and silly stuff like that. Or the dog's not being trained at all, or being trained in a way that doesn't bring the best out of the dog. But as I'm saying this in the context of a bloke that's ruined a lot of dogs. I've ruined many, many dogs over the last 50 years just through sheer ignorance. And I'm learning every day, you know. And I try not to ruin too many these days.
If there's somebody sitting out there and they're thinking, man, these dogs sound really cool. And I run into this a lot with plots. You know, people think, you know, I want to get into plots. And or you can look at it even from the equestrian side with mules. But they don't really know what they're getting into. And what would be your advice to someone who's sitting out there thinking, you know, it might be cool to have a Yarg Terrier? What is some advice that you can give that person, maybe a forewarning, to keep them from either not being successful with this training or just simply going crazy trying to figure out, you know, there's nothing worse than a high performance dog going into the wrong situation and being wasted there, and people not being prepared to handle what they're going to get. So what advice would you have for somebody that thinks they might want to get a Yarg Terrier?
Well, look, there's a number of pieces of advice, but one of the adages that I use quite a lot is I'd far rather tame a tiger than push a turtle. And Yarg Terriers are tigers. They are not turtles. You don't need to teach these things how to hunt. That's in them. It's in their DNA. It's in their very essence. Mm-hmm. You need to learn how to manage them. So before you get any performance dog, in particular Yarg Terriers, you need to go out and learn how to train dogs, learn how to handle dogs, learn how to train them, learn as much as you possibly can about training dogs. They're just a dog, the same as any other dog, and the training techniques vary. Pardon me. The training techniques vary according to your circumstances. So unless you actually know what training techniques to apply, what techniques to use, and what's available, you're short selling yourself, and you're not giving your dog a fair chance. So I actually listened to Heath Hyatt on your podcast talking about training dogs and high drive dogs, and he's a genius when it comes to that sort of stuff, being able to articulate training high drive dogs. And getting back to the Yarg Terriers, a lot of people, as with, you know, pit bulls and all those tough guy dogs, a lot of people get these dogs for the idea of having a tough dog or a good dog. They don't really understand what responsibility goes with it. And the responsibility isn't just feeding it and housing it. The responsibility is training it and using the dog for what it's meant to do. So unless you can train the dog, unless you can use the dog, you know, for what it's bred to do, just get something out of the pound, get a pet of some sort, and just have a friendly dog instead of one of these high powered type dogs.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, I'll just try to maybe paint a word picture here, but you know, certain people that have dogs and they have no desire to understand training and things like that. From what I'm hearing you saying about the drive, the prey drive, the high drive of the Yarg Terrier, it's going to take somebody who is dedicated and an advanced type trainer to get the most out of that and have the most pleasurable experience.
I agree.
You can find plenty of dogs. Go get a, if you just need a dog to hang out with you, then go get a golden retriever.
Exactly.
You know, they're happy, and you know, they pick up on some of that stuff. But man, when you start getting into terrier breeds, that's what fascinates me so much about it. Is it's a hot. It's like the next level. You know, even as hounds, as a houndsman and having hound breeds and things like that, hounds are pretty pliable when it comes to training. They're not, they've got the genetic makeup. They understand what their job is, and you just kind of mold it and push it in the right direction. And with terriers, then you have to be a little more assertive and be more involved in the training process. And speak on that a little bit, Alex.
Yeah, with terriers, in particular Yark terriers, and I've had a fair bit to do with various other breeds, you need to be involved in the training process from the outset, and just apply good dog training techniques. You don't need a degree in rocket science to train a dog. It's fairly bargain basement stuff,
right?
You know, and it, from when they're little puppies, when you first get them, you start training them and you start conditioning them. There is no difference to doing that to any other breed of dog. The thing is that the repercussions of poor training or a lack of training are significantly higher with high drive dogs. You can imagine somebody with a Malinois that wasn't trained properly, or any of these police dogs, right. You know. It ends in tears. It ends in tears for the person that's being bitten on the other end, and it also ends in tears for you when you find yourself in front of a court getting sued. With these Yark.
Same thing goes for the American Pit Bull Terrier is a perfect example of that.
Well, Yark Terriers are in many ways mirror what goes on with pit bulls. You know, these dogs are much smaller than pit bulls generally, and they
don't know it.
They've got plenty of drive, and if they're not managed properly, they can cause heartache and tears for everyone involved. So unless you're prepared to, unless you're prepared to do extra, don't get one. That's pretty well it. Look, these dogs are ruined by all performance dogs. Sooner or later, are ruined by scatter breeding, people breeding them for the wrong reasons, people mismanaging them, and they get labelled with, oh no, these dogs are no good because they're too savage and too wild or they're crazy. These are the sort of things that you hear from people that are ignorant, that don't understand exactly what's going on. And this, right. And, you know, people right. say, yeah, plot hounds are too hard and too gritty and that sort of stuff. This comes from people who don't know what they're talking about. You know, you breed your dogs for a trait. You breed your dogs to do things that you want them to do. And there's no difference to the terriers. And I'm very selective. I'm very selective on who I sell these dogs to, and I vet them pretty well. There's a lot of people that have got their nose out of joint because I wouldn't sell them a dog. I don't reckon they're the sort of guy that needs one, or that would do the right thing by the dog. You know, invariably you know that the dog will either come back, wind up in a pound somewhere, or worse still get run over or killed, unnecessarily and avoidably if they're properly managed. That doesn't happen. And look, I suppose as a breeder, I always say to people, no matter what happens, if you need to get rid of the dog, or if you can no longer hang on to the dog, ring me first and tell me, and I'll take the dog back. Because I genuinely know what goes into making these dogs, and I genuinely want to see them live a long and happy life, or as long and a happy life as I possibly can. That's why I'm very careful who I sell them to.
I guess this just came to me, Alex. You know, we talk often about the animal rights, anti-hunting, animal zealot crowd that makes emotional decisions rather than factual, common sense, scientific-backed decisions. And terriers, the Yogs that you're talking about is the same way. If you're going to make an emotional decision, I think it'd be cool to have a Yog with a pair of sunglasses on hanging out of the front of my truck. You know, don't get a Yog Terrier. It's not for you. I see it in hounds as well, and it's across the board. I've seen everything from Border Collies. Those dogs need a job. They're not cool dogs to hang out in a condominium in a suburban neighborhood and just be your buddy all the time. Absolutely. I mean, if you're a dog trainer and you can manage that, then that's all good. But if you're just looking for a low maintenance type dog that you want to hang out with you and be cool, stay away from it. The breeders, the Yog Terrier breeders, the hound breeders, the performance dog breeders, we don't care if you buy one of our dogs. We don't need you to buy one of our dogs. We want the best for them. And a working dog that doesn't have a job, it ends up being a problem dog every time.
Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed. I've seen it happen time and time again. That's why I don't like releasing dogs to people that I don't trust. I know it's a big order. It's a big order, but it's one of those things. I suppose it comes from years of being a cop. You know, you make a very
I think it does.
You make a short.
You and I are on the same page there.
You make a short assessment on what you reckon this guy is going to be like, and a lot of guys can talk the talk, but they can't walk the walk. And my
man, I'll tell you what.
My attitude is to
absolutely.
Get,
I mean,
get them to show me that they can walk the walk, and I'll sell them a dog.
Yeah, that's the biggest hurdle for us, for people. And I don't consider myself a breeder, but people who raise dogs to be able to get those dogs in the right spots. And I mean, that's the biggest stressful. That's the most stressful part of raising a litter of pups for me. If I can't keep them all, then finding those spots where they need to go. I absolutely stay awake at night thinking about, man, this pup went here. I'm not sure about this person. And I've gotten past that, but that was some of my hurdles in the early days.
If I'm not sure, I don't sell them a dog. Full stop. End of story.
That's where I've gotten to as well.
And
if I know that they're not up to the task, they don't get one. They don't get one.
I use the easy come, easy go scenario. You know, these guys come up with a pocket full of money. I want one of these dogs, and you know, and it's a given that they know what they're doing. And I think to themselves, mate, if you can't convince me that you actually do know what you're doing and you're prepared to look after this thing and train it and get the best out of it, yeah, you're not going to get it. Go and buy yourself something else. You know? And you don't make many friends doing that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people get their nose,
out of joint. He's arrogant. Yeah. He's arrogant. He wouldn't sell me a pup. You get your name dragged through the mud. But at the end of the day, you got to do what you got to do. And sorry about your luck, but I think any serious breeder of working dogs, the most accomplished breeders that I know, they're not worried about that. They don't care. It's like, go buy a golden, go find a golden retriever. I don't care what you do.
Exactly. Look, the thing is, the core of people that actually do have these dogs to hunt with, you know them straight away. You can tell in a very short period of time, you know, the sort of person that they are. You know, the guys, unless they live to hunt and live for dogs, you can tell straight away. You know, I'll get young guys turn up here to go come hound hunting with me. And you can pick which ones are going to make it and which ones aren't. You know, these guys that'll go the extra mile just to go and recover a dog that could be 4 or 5 miles away in some distant gully, just to go and track him down and find him and bring him back. And the guy that goes out of his way, you know, he comes home from a hard day's work to go and feed these things and take them out and run them. You know, they're the sort of people that make good dog people, not guys that throw them in a.
It goes right back to. It goes back to what my buddy Mike Colley says. We've used this line a million times on this podcast, but it stands true. Nobody's ever proven it wrong. If you want to know which dog out of a litter is going to be the best dog, the one that you hunt the most. And it doesn't matter if you come back from a day of in the you know, the digging ditches all day. If you've got the energy to put your boots on and take him hunting, you got a better chance of making a good dog.
You got to find the energy, buddy. You got to find the energy. you got to find the time. If you haven't got the energy or the time, get out of it, take up fishing, do something else. But you're not a dog man.
And you're a fisherman.
I am a fisherman.
You're a fisherman.
I am. And the older I get, the more of a fisherman I am. I'm here to tell you.
All right, so this is the last question I got about Yog Terriers, and then we'll wrap this up. But typically a bear hunter in the United States will have hounds, and they'll have hounds on the rig, and they'll. Is it feasible to think that I could build a pack of bear dogs out of Yog Terriers? Is that feasible for me do they have the olfactory sense, the tracking ability, the grit, the endurance, all of that stuff to be able to do that with the Yog Terrier?
There's guys doing it now. They're doing it as we speak. There's guys that hunt bobcats, mountain lions, and bears with Yog Terriers very successfully. And hogs and all sorts of those other critters that they hunt down there in Texas. These are great dogs. They're never going to take the place of hounds. That's why I also have hounds, but they've got their niche in doing stuff. Mine don't have any trouble sticking with the hounds. They're just a different dog. They've got a high sense of drive, high sense of purpose, and you're definitely going to have, if you want to hunt bears or terriers or bobcats or mountain lions, the Yark Terriers are the ones you want to do it with. That's for sure. They can do the job. As they say, the bullshit stops when the tailgate drops. Nothing could be more true when you've got a
block
full of Yag Terriers, because they'll hunt their hearts out for you. But don't let them go. Don't let them go with a Garmin collar on them.
I hear you. That's the thing that I always look at in a dog. I'm not trying to bring this back. I've got a hound right now. That dog will not quit working. He's a hound, but I like his spirit. That's what I like the most about him. He's not the best bear dog on the mountain every day. He's not the best. He's definitely not a coon dog, but he never quits. And I really like that trait that he has.
You can't train that. They've either got it or they haven't.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Alex, hey, buddy. Man, I'll tell you what, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to educate us on Yog Terriers. They're a breed that I've wanted to talk about for a long time. And as always, thanks. Appreciate it.
Anytime. I look forward to all your podcasts every week. Keep up the good work. Houndsman XP is outstanding, and you're kicking goals. Just make sure you don't stop.
We'll keep it rolling.
We're listening to you, man.
Yep. I appreciate it. Well, Alex, until next time, buddy, you follow your hounds and I'll follow mine.
All the best.